What's cracking? We move into hour number two. Like I said, today was going to be a really good day. And we just had a really good first hour. It literally just hosted itself. I love it when that happens. All right, welcome to the program. I'm Jim Rome. We are coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Need to know what it takes for a home to fit your budget and your family, Rocket can. Ended hour number one by having a conversation with an NFL draft prospect. Played his college ball in Mississippi, Matt Corral. Really enjoyed that. Coming up in hour number three, my first in-studio interview since pre-pandemic. If you can believe that, UFC President Dana White will be by. I want to talk some college basketball right now. We are joined by the head coach at Loyola University of Chicago. First season as Ramblers head coach. He spent the previous four seasons as an assistant there. Loyola is having a big year, 14-2, 5-0 in conference play, number 22 in the AP poll. They are at home Saturday. In fact, they're playing right here on the CBS Sports Network. They take on Missouri State. Drew Valentine is their head coach. He joins us. Drew, it is great to have you on the show. Drew, how are you?
I'm good, Jim. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Drew, it's great to have you on. I've been looking forward to it, and there's a number of things I want to talk to you about. You beat Evansville at their place on Tuesday. You've won 10 straight. You are unbeaten in conference play. You're 22 in the AP poll. How would you describe where the team and the program is right now at this point in the season?
You know, it's a great question. I think that we're in a really good spot right now. Obviously, there's so much to improve on. There's so many ways in which we feel like we can be better. We had a couple slow starts, three games in a row prior to our last game against Evansville. You know, we feel like we can get better defensively. I think our last game versus Evansville kind of showed where we think we can be at as far as the defensive team. And but I'm really loving our resilience right now. I'm loving our competitive spirit. I'm loving this guy's focus. And most importantly, their togetherness and ability to just find a way to win.
All right, so Drew, the thing is, everybody who knows you knew it was only a matter of time before you became a head coach. But in talking to a lot of coaches over the years, they always say that no matter how much you've prepared, being the head coach is still a major, major adjustment. You might move one chair over, but it might as well be like 5,000 miles. What's it been like for you?
It's just been crazy. It's been a complete whirlwind. You know, ever since, you know, April, the beginning of April when I took over the job, figuring out staff, you know, getting to know some new staff members, letting them into the culture, then, you know, trying to figure out what the roster was going to look like and with the COVID year, you know, trying to figure out which one of those, you know, COVID seniors were going to come back and then freshmen. And so there's just so many things that I've learned, so many things that I'm still trying to get better at and improve on. And I think that's been just my mindset through it all, is just, you know, take things as they come, and do your best to figure out and do them the best that you can along the way.
Drew Valentine joining us. Now, the story goes that when Porter Moser was leaving, the AD, Steve Watson, asked you if you wanted the head coaching job, and you just busted out laughing and said something to the effect of, hell yes, I want that job. What was the conversation really like, and then what did it mean to you to be named head coach of such a great, great program?
I mean, it truly was that simple. You know, it's crazy because, you know, when Coach Moser was you know, going through some, you know, potential leaving a couple years ago. Myself and Steve Watson kind of started having some conversations, not monthly, not weekly, but just a couple times during the last couple years. And I felt like I was in a position, and I knew that, you know, he kind of thought highly of me enough that to possibly take over this position as head coach here at Loyola one day. And so, When Coach Moser decided to, you know, take the job at Oklahoma, it was really that simple. And so I'm so blessed. I'm so grateful. I'm so thankful in their trust and belief in me to take over this program and to try to, you know, keep us improving and taking this thing to new heights.
Right, Drew. Not only the belief of, like, the athletic department and the AD, but the players themselves. You mentioned the seniors in a COVID year. When you were named head coach, a number of your possible super seniors told you that they would be coming back to school. What did that mean to the program and to you personally?
I mean, I think it meant a lot. I think, you know, as a coach, you know, I think it's pretty coach speak and pretty cliche to talk about relationships with your players, but I think there's no more greater validation of that for me, for you know, my relationships. I know how I felt about my relationships with those guys, but for those guys to trust me with their last year and you know, have enough trust that we could be a good team and possibly compete for winning championships this year, and help them grow as players and help them develop and improve, you know, for one extra year of college. It meant a lot to me, for all the guys that decided to come back. I mean, we, you know, returned 7 of our top 8 scorers, you know, obviously from a team that made a Sweet 16 last year. And you know, there's some guys that, you know, last year might not have played as much as they wanted to. And I was still here. So it's not like somebody new was coming in and selling them a new dream. I've, you know, my slogan and catchphrase, that you could say when I first took the job was I wanted to stay committed to the culture that we established here at Loyola Chicago. And so it meant a lot for me for them to have trust in me and gave me a lot of confidence. And that's a huge part in which I think that's why we're rolling right now is the belief and trust that they have within this culture and within this program here at Loyola.
Drew Valentine joining us. All right, to that point, culture. It's interesting because your mantra is committed to the culture. Porter Moser had a phrase, created by culture. So how would you define the differences between those two mantras?
Yeah, I just think it's, you know, obviously they coach and the previous assistant coaches that worked here, the previous players, I talk to those guys all the time. I was actually talking to Clayton Custer on Wednesday, and, you know, he was, you know, telling me congrats on the win, congrats on the start, and I'm like, hey, Clay, this whole thing here wouldn't be in place without the foundation that, you know, guys like you, like Milton Doyle, Dante Ingram, Marcus Towns, Andre Jackson, obviously Cam Crutwig, the culture that those guys established. And so when I took this thing over, I wanted everybody to know that it wasn't just going to be a complete changing of what we know that works here at Loyola Chicago, because, you know, Coach Moser obviously had a great formula for what works at this program, at this level, and obviously in the league and nationally as well, because we've had a lot of postseason success. And so since that's been so successful and since I've been a part of helping create that culture, I just wanted everybody to know that we were going to remain committed to those values, those standards, those championship standards that we have established here at Loyola.
Drew, so what about that? Like you obviously worked with him, and some people have even referred to you as Porter 2.0. Fact is, you're your own guy, you're your own person, you're your own coach. But what did you learn from working with Porter?
I mean, so many different things, so many different lessons, you know, balance. You know, I think he does and did an incredible job of, you know, being a really good father, being a really good husband, and then also being a really good basketball coach and all the things that go into the job. I think I learned, you know, I already had a really good start in my coaching career with Coach Tom Izzo on preparation and what it takes to be successful each and every day in a championship level program. But I think Porter just did it in another different way. So I learned more about preparation, learned more about recruiting, learned more about organization, scouting. I mean, there's so many different things that go into this job that I learned and took from him. And I'm really grateful that not only I got to learn from such a great basketball coach, but a great person.
So, Drew, you were 29 years old when you were named head coach, making you what is believed to be the youngest head coach in D1 basketball. You hit the ground running. You're connecting with players. You're connecting with recruits and more. And then just a few days after you were named head coach, your wife, Taylor, who was pregnant, was not feeling well and then went to the hospital. What happened next?
Yeah, so I was literally, my mom had just got here. She was helping me kind of redecorate the office here in the Gentile Center. And Taylor called me and was like, hey, I think you need to get here. And I was kind of being hesitant at first. And I ended up going to the hospital. And just about an hour after that, my daughter Hayden was born. And so it was a whirlwind. She stayed in the NICU for, you know, just over 13 weeks, you know, almost 3.5 months. And so it was just like every day I'd, you know, be working. And then she actually had to get – she was at one hospital, then got transferred hospital. So I'd make a drive up to the hospital, then drive home. And so it was some long days and long nights and obviously a lot of emotions. You know, she had a couple different procedures on her head. And It was just, it was a grind, but I'm lucky that I have a superstar wife who is now a superstar mom, and lucky that we have so much support from people here in the university and obviously our family and friends as well.
So true. So people understand your daughter was delivered 11 and a half weeks early, and you talked about what it was like. And Taylor said, quote, "It's a lot on your mind. It's a lot on your body, but he handled it out. He handled all of it. He was just a warrior." I guarantee that you would say the same thing about her. You know, you and I talked about what you learned from Porter Moser. You mentioned Tom Izzo. What did you learn from Hayden during that time? And what did you learn about yourself?
Yeah, first and foremost, I got to, obviously people talk about it all the time. You don't know what it's like to be a parent until you are one. And so I think I've got a better feel with like our parents here at Loyola. Like when I speak to them about their young men that are a part, their sons that are a part of our program, I think I can try to sympathize with them a little bit better. I also learned just how fragile life is. How important just small victories and small milestones are, you know, like, and then you also, you know, take another lesson in, you know, pushing through adversity. You know, everything doesn't always turn out perfect. Everything doesn't always turn out the way that you kind of envision it in your head. But when things happen, you got to figure out the way to handle them the best way you can. And you got to have confidence and belief in whatever that might be, whether that's your faith, whether that's your family, whether that's your values, that things are going to work out the way that they're destined to work out. And so I learned a lot of that through my times, and I'm still learning that ever since I've been a dad.
Hey, listen, you've been through quite a bit. You've learned quite a bit. Before I let you go, you're not just a head coach. You are also a father, husband. You're also a legendary sneakerhead with a collection, Drew, that is so well known. There is a Twitter account dedicated to it. What are the highlights of your collection?
Man, I've got so many. You know, sneakers, they mean so much to me, just from a emotional standpoint. I mean, the black and red Bandit Jordan 1s, those are my favorite pair of sneakers. I also love the Space Jam Jordan 11s. Those are one of my favorites. And then a couple new ones, you know, I love the Nike Dunks. We've been wearing the Midas Gold Nike Dunks that are kind of like Loyola colors. The black and white, they call them the Panda Nike Dunks. I love those as well. And then I got a couple, the Amon Meniers. I'm actually going to wear those coming up here pretty soon in a game. And then I also love like the Travis Scott Cactus Jack Jordan 1 Lows. I love those as well.
I love that. So really quickly, like I understand this, but why do they represent so much to you? What do they represent to you?
You know, just like culture, you know, like the culture that I grew up in, you know, where it's kind of like the intersection of, you know, like hip hop culture, whether it's music and, you know, basketball and football. And it's just kind of like how I grew up. And then, you know, they have meaning from different times in my life, you know, whether, you know, the last shot Jordan 14s, you know, that was one of the first NBA finals I can remember. Yes, I'm, you know, that young. Michael Jordan hit his last shot. We were downstairs in my basement, and I remember running around in the basement with my dad. You know, the Jordan 3s, those are my dad's favorite pair of shoes. He always had a pair of white and cement Jordan 3s. So, like, there's just different things that connect me to times in my lives and kind of puts life in perspective for me. So I have a lot of gratitude towards sneaker culture, and just it gives me, like, you know, like a sense of pride when I can put on a fresh pair of kicks.
Like, I sort of want to apologize. In fact, I do want to apologize for still keeping you here. I never do interviews this long, but this is how interesting you are to me, Drew. I got to ask one last thing. You had a really nice career playing at Oakland. You had opportunities to play professionally, but you made the decision to get right into coaching. What was that decision-making process like for you at the time?
Yeah, I had a, you know, couple injuries. I had surgery on my hand. I had, you know, a knee surgery right after my senior season. I played basically a whole season on a torn meniscus, and I had something wrong with my hand as well. So when I was like rehabbing from those injuries, I just, my body wasn't feeling up to par. And then also, I thought the opportunity that Coach Izzo, I'm so grateful for, he had given me the opportunity to be a grad assistant. And, you know, I kind of looked at some of my former teammates that were, you know, at that time playing overseas, and a lot of them were trying to find a way to break into the coaching profession. And I thought at the time, like, hey, if I'm only going to go over and play overseas because my body will probably won't allow me to play more than a couple years, why not just get started with what you're going to do for hopefully, you know, me now, hopefully, you know, 40, 50 years, my coaching career. And so I was fortunate to do that. And it also didn't hurt that I was going to have the opportunity to be at home with my brother, who was a sophomore at the time at Michigan State. So there were so many different things, but I'm really grateful for that opportunity, and I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Coach Izzo and his trust and belief in me.
Very cool, very smart. He's the head basketball coach at Loyola University of Chicago. They've got a game coming up on Saturday right here on CBS Sports Network against Missouri State, 14-2, 5-0, number 22 in the AP poll, and a great, great story. Drew, you lived up to all the hype. Not that I'm surprised, but I knew that you'd show up and just kill it like that. Really appreciate you, Drew. Thanks so much. Let's do it again soon.
Okay. Of course, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Great to have you on. Well done, Coach. Really well done. Well, and by the way, he's 30 if you need him. Got the job at 29, thought to be the youngest head coach in D1 ball, and understandably so.
30.
What a good day. 1-800-636-8686. So we start the day with two really good interviews. Matt Corral, Drew Valentine, and I've got another good one coming up. In studio, no less, Dana White. Dana White, exactly 1 hour and 4 minutes from right now. I'm really eager to do that. I have not seen Dana in person in a long time. In fact, I haven't really seen anybody in person in a long time. Not in this studio, other than Alvin once a week when he totes the giant plastic tower of beef in. Since the pandemic, we have gone completely wireless. Paperless. Remember back in the day, we actually would have somebody physically walk in tweets. Oh my God, like how? That was a really efficient system and a good use of resources. Why don't we just print up a piece of paper with one or two lines on it and do it over and over and over again? And then I crumble it up and throw it in the trash for where it may or may not have been recycled. I'm not proud to announce that. Okay, yeah, we did. We recycled it. Of course we did. Allegedly, repeat. Very efficient. Very responsible. And yes, I'm very proud. And I remember Ritt saying, "What? System works perfectly." I'm like, come on, Ritt. Come on, man. Get out of your Model T and look at the way the world is, all right? There's a lot of green stuff going on around here. Imagine how much money we spent on toner, because what's more expensive than toner? Like, maybe jet fuel and nothing else. Hey, Alvin. Hey, Alvin, I need more toner. Oh, great, dude. You think I got 10 grand lying around? Yeah, I don't know, Alvin. I just need more toner. So the pandemic was very difficult and very challenging in a number of ways, but it did make us better. You got to get better. You got to get better, and we did. So really, nobody's been in the studio in about 2 years. Dana will come in, and we'll have that for you next hour. Who else wants in? Who wants in right now? Hit me up, 1-800-636-8686. We will come back, and when we do, I want to talk about the Cowboys. Mike McCarthy, surprisingly, or not surprisingly, I should say, is not coming off the end of the game. He is insisting he made the right call. Right play call, right time, right everything. It just, for some reason, didn't work. That's coming up. Stay tuned. And this incredible story, if I can get to it, about the most courageous field reporter I think I've ever seen, at least domestically, unless you're in a war zone. And by the way, she practically was. That's coming up, too. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
It is the divisional round. It's going to be an amazing weekend. Great, great NFL weekend. I love all the matchups. James Kelly and I, the Big Head, going to break it down tomorrow. Big Head Bets. Big Head Bets and a big-time fister in Anaheim. We may mix that in, too. Speaking of which, Dana White will be in studio next hour, but definitely next or tomorrow we will have a Big Head Bet segment because I know a lot of you want to know which way we're leaning. These are tough games. Tough games, ATS. But we will have it for you tomorrow. Meantime, some quick reaction. Hey, get on the phones. There's no reason not to, especially this week. 1-800-636-8686. Stephen T. Grady at Agent for Sports. Great interview with Coach Valentine. He is the perfect successor to Moser. Great story on his wife and daughter. He and Loyola Chicago are more than worthy to be on your radar. Oh, hell yes, they're on my radar. They're on the national radar. Of course, great program. That's why I said to him, what did it mean to you to get that opportunity at such a young age at a great program? Great hire by them. Great program. Great culture. I mean, very rarely do I keep somebody on the program that long, especially somebody I've never spoken to before. He was tremendous. At General Ledger, he says, Jim, I'm pretty sure the, quote, barn, which Mike McCarthy spent time in before the season, was really just an old country buffet. The only thing he gained in the offseason were points on his cholesterol test. Ian in Chicago. See, there's something about that barn, though. And I got to admit, when he did that, I thought it was a brilliant marketing ploy. I don't know how much of that barn is the reason Jarra gave him that job. I don't know what Big Mike said to Jarra in the interview. I mean, I have no idea how he got that job, the way he got that job. But in part, it was because Big Mike got blown out of Green Bay and was bitter and was not handling it well. He admitted it. He talked about what a low point it was for he and his family, and they had so much trouble getting over it. And then Mike had an epiphany, apparently. Big Mike did. Be better, not bitter. Be better, not bitter. So he stayed in Wisco, and he was not that far from the stadium, and he had this barn, this beautiful barn that he had had constructed, or it was already an existing facility, but he turned it into a think tank. And he and a bunch of other unemployed coaches got together, and they met on the daily, I think. Not even the weekly, but at the daily. And they looked at current trends, and they would meet like game week, and they would prepare, and they'd break tape, and they'd watch film, and they would talk about things, and they would look at analytics. And I got to tell you something. And then he reached out to certain members of the media who mattered, who did stories on it, and it was actually pretty slick. And who would have ever said anything? Who would ever describe Big Mike as slick? But it was slick. And it looked good. And it came off well. Like, yeah, I took my firing and I went to school on that. And I did my soul searching and I went to work. And I spent an hour or a week. Check that. I spent a year hunkered down in this barn working with a staff that I hired and created, and we were committed to figuring out what went wrong. And if we got another opportunity, what would we do differently? It actually was brilliant because what it was a deck, a sales deck. And he pitched Jarra, and it worked, and he got over. I mean, it really was something. So I don't know what the hell they did in that barn. It was almost like some big scam, you know, like some Ponzi scheme, like let's bring the investors in and walk them around when there's really nothing. There's no it behind the it. Just the same guy. But it worked. You know what he did? This guy sold one of the great salesmen ever. He got over on a guy who's about as good a salesman as there ever has been. Jerry Jones is an amazing salesman. He is. And Big Mike, not exactly the most sophisticated dude ever, got over, got the gig, got the job, got the money. There's something to be said for somebody who gets over and gets the job. And the big fella did. Problem is, what do you do with the opportunity once you get it? What he did this year. You call a quarterback draw with no timeouts left. That's what you do when you get the opportunity. And even if he didn't draw that play up himself, he certainly didn't kill it. He didn't veto it. He didn't overrule it. And whatever it is, he created a culture whereby that seemed like a good idea. if all of these guys are so smart, if Kellen Moore is the next genius, if Big Mike is so brilliant, how is it that anywhere within that culture or that system, somebody thought that was a good idea? How does even Dak say, oh, hell no, I'm not doing that? Everybody knows. Steve Young, I'm going to play this for you in a minute. Steve Young told me during a podcast I did with him this week how long it takes to run that play successfully. Let's just say you know, everybody knew except those who had to know, you need more than 14 seconds. Yet the big fella continues to say, nope, right call at the right time. And then he has this crazy reason why it didn't work, except that he would do it again. All of that is still ahead. Let me see really quickly some other reaction as I go to break. Hey, Jim, your last two guests had something in common that I found appealing. Neither of them was overly polished, but both of them struck me as honest and genuine and likable. Larry in Albany, yes. Here's another word that gets overused a lot, but it's important. Authentic. Like, somebody said to me, Matt Corral was so honest and almost to a fault. I don't think you can be too honest. I don't think that could ever be a fault. I mean, he answered everything really honestly. And then Drew Valentine was just real and authentic, which is why people connect to him. And he's very bright, but people connect to him. Carlito's Way 505 tweets, you unhyped Space Jam 2 so much that when I was forced to watch it with my nephews, it actually was not as bad as I thought. Not good, but instead of an F minus, I gave it a D minus.
Not good.
My dude, as I always say, you are entitled to your opinion, no matter how wrong your opinion is, because you're the only one on the planet who feels that way. There's nobody anywhere in this country not named Braun that saw that movie that didn't give it an F minus except for you and Braun. So you're entitled to your opinion. Just know it's wrong. I respect your opinion no matter how wrong it is. And one more as we go to break. This guy's just straight up. No smack, no junk, no lame joke. At Tantrumgasm. Hey, Rome. Linda Rambis is the hated shadow owner of the Lakers. And Jeannie Buss is letting it happen. She is so detested. Magic quit. Kobe distanced himself. Phil Jackson was pushed away. Jerry and Ryan West were pushed away. For Rambis and Pelinka? Sell the team, Jeannie. She's not selling the team. The thing about Jeannie, Jeannie's really bright. I like Jeannie. I've always liked her. However, this is all happening on her watch. And I think Jerry picked the smart one. It's all happening on her watch. It's her team. All right, so when we return, I do want to talk about Steve Young and what he had to say about that final play. But then again, maybe I should talk about Mike McCarthy and what he had to say about the final play, because he was responsible for it. In fact, why don't we talk about the big fella next? Dana White is coming in studio next hour. In fact, 1 hour from right now. Remember, not all beef jerky is the same. Old Trapper's original old-fashioned teriyaki, hot and spicy and peppered, all come in 4-ounce bags. So you can sample different flavors to find the best one for you. Ask for Old Trapper by name, because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef? At Lanier Messenger, still my favorite handle, tweets, sounds like Jarrah's sales skills could have gone well with our company. He could have. Jarrah could have sold the Messenger. I couldn't sell Jack. Mad respect. Major ups, major props to outside sales reps. I respect the hell out of all of you. I mean, I can only imagine how life has changed right now with the pandemic, but even prior to the pandemic, when everything was normal and everything was equal, I still have major respect for you, because I couldn't do it. I sucked. Cold calling, prospecting, crappy territories, crappy products. Never mind that I wouldn't own any of it. It was me. It was all me. I couldn't do it. I was not good at it. Oh, no, it's not me. It's the territory. I got a crappy territory. Oh, it's not me. It's the product. I got a crappy product. Oh, no, it was me. It was me. So I always had great respect for those of you that could do it. And if you could do it, it's because you were a super greaseball and slimeball. Just kidding. I have mad respect for it. I still have nightmares. I still wake up in the middle of the night in a cold sweat over two things. Even in my midlife, there are still two things that wake me up a few times a year. Number one, again, college finals that I'm not prepared for. I still have that dream. The other dream that I have less frequently, but I do have it, is that dream of being a sales rep and having to go out with no good leads, no good ideas, really no idea what I was doing, and having nothing on the board, and coming to the end of the month and walking in with the sales manager by the door, waiting for all of us to come in and seeing a big goose egg up on the board. What a nightmare. What a nightmare. Sunday night, knowing I had to get up and do it again the next morning. Nightmare. So I could do this bit forever. I really, really respect outside sales reps. And even worse, I tried hard. Like, I tried hard. I busted my ass. I read every sales book ever written. I tried so hard. Could never sell jack. Ever. Jarrett can. And obviously, Big Mike can, too, because he got that gig. Abigail is in. Ed Romy's my homie. Jimmers. Now, I'm just shouting out to you sales reps. If you're listening, I know a lot of you, and again, I'm sure the gig has changed, but there were so many sales reps back in the day who would drive around all day long and listen to the show in the car. So I always want to shout out to y'all. Tough gig. Jimmers, Big Fat Mike. Fat? It's kind of harsh, Abigail. BFM, Big Fat Mike. Fat? I've never referred to him as Big Fat Mike. The big fella, sure. Jimmers, Big Fat Mike. Should worry. Alvin, you're not helping him. Let me try it again. Let me try that again. Jimmers, Big Fat Mike. Fat. Oh, so you do it louder. I'm going to try this one last time. Jimmers, Big Fat Mike. Fat. Alvin, what's up, dude? Are you about to take another 2 weeks off? Jimmers, Big Fat Mike should worry more. For those of you unaware, that's what is known as the fat alarm. And that's not even what you think it is. Alvin, this tweet is two lines long. Can I just get through it? Jimmers, Big Fat Mike should worry about his football team and less fat? About the custard dome and chocolate fat. Fountain at the hometown buffet. Fat, signed, fat, diabetes. War Wilford, Big Fat Brimley, RIP.
Diabetes.
Diabetes, diabetes.
Damn,
diabetes,
Abigail.
Diabetes.
Hey, Abby, thanks. It took me half a segment to do one tweet. And I can't even get to Big Fat Mike now. I have an actual take. Man, she's fierce. NoCal Vic, I like it. Vic's been coming in a lot lately. I like that. At NoCal Vic, quote, "You're overthinking this, Rome." Big Mike McHardy's got the Cowboys job by using the oldest trick in the book. "Hey, Mr. Jerry Jones, I'm going to be in your city next week. Which day works best for me to come in and sign a contract as your next head coach? Monday or Tuesday?" You're so right, Vic. I'm telling you, this is the crap they used to teach us. I know I've told you that before, but I'm looking back on it. It's incredible that they ever thought that would work. That is the type of crap that I learned in sales school. You call up a prospect and you say, "Hey, if I had an idea that could save you 20%, wouldn't you be interested in hearing more about that?" And the thinking is, who doesn't want to save money? Of course they'll say yes. When in reality, what they used to say is, did you go to hell? How'd you get my number? No, click. This is how it goes. This is what they teach you in sales school, at least back in the day when I did it. If I had an idea, Mr. Prospect or Mrs. Prospect, that could save you 20%, wouldn't you want to know more information about it? Why, yes. Yes, of course. Great. I will be in your neighborhood Tuesday and Thursday of next week. What works better for you? Tuesday? 3 o'clock? Or 5 o'clock? 3 o'clock. Great. See you then. Easy job. I tried that no less than 10,000 times, and it did not work once. Almost got my ass kicked a number of times with it because it's so insulting and patronizing. Yeah, great idea, sales professor. Great idea, Dale Carnegie. Thanks for that one, Zig Ziglar. Hey, Tom Hopkins, really appreciate that idea. Who comes up with that crap? Anyway, it didn't work for me. Ever. Not once. Pauly T. Wall. Starting to think Big Mike's think tank barn was really more of a weekend bondo party. Nah, nothing like that houseboat party, which I regret. Should have gone on that. There's some invitations that you get once and only once. And if you say no, they don't run it back. There will never, ever be another macho weekend. At least not one that I'm a part of. Who will ever forget? Add that to the list of things that I should have never said no to. There are three regrets I have. Three invites that I should have said yes to. One, Robert Plant inviting me backstage to a concert. I said no. Number two, Andre Agassi inviting me to he and Brooke Shields' New Year's Eve party in Brentwood. Oh, I said yes. I couldn't say yes fast enough to that one. But Dodger Jano shot it down. Not because of Brooke or Andre. I love Andre. Janet loves Andre. But she previously committed us to something else that sucked, frankly. My second biggest regret. My third biggest regret in declining invitation was saying no to the Bondo Super Macho Weekend. You might recall this invite.
I have to run it by the crew. You know, just there's a lot of gentlemen on the boat who have been there for the 25 that I got to respect. I've been there for one. This will be my second boat. But I got to respect the elders on the boat. I got to run it by them.
Bondo, I don't know, man. I mean, that's with respect. If this is only your second year on the boat, how do you have the authority to extend an invitation like that? Not only why not get on, they may throw you off.
No, I don't think so. No, they trust me.
All right, so that was Bondo. I think what he said, when I have to run it by somebody else, or I have to run it by the committee, I think what he was responding to, I think I tried to get Kyle Brandt to come on with me. So imagine a houseboat on a three-day weekend. Dozen dudes, topless. And one waitress, apparently topless, for 2 hours. Bondo, I have one question. What did all your better halves have to say about that? Why was that okay? What do the wives think of the Macho Weekend?
The wives don't know what happens on Macho Weekend. It's kind of like Vegas.
Of course, it's exactly like Vegas, except you're floating around on a houseboat with 13 dudes around Lake Shasta. Chase, you can relate to that. What up, Stu? JJ Sportmo writes, holy crap, Rome. Alvin has me dying. Yet the fat alarm sounds dangerously close to the tornado sirens of the Midwest. I think they should use Alvin's alarm to tell us a fat EF5 tornado is coming to kill us all. Yet I'd be laughing too hard and not getting into a basement. There are exactly three versions of the fat alarm. That's version one. Here is version two. Here's version three. fourth one was the Fat Symphony, not the
Did
alarm,
I get
right?
Fat?
Are you?
Is anybody not fat?
Fat.
We're not body shaming at all. This is my way of saying stop doing that. You're all a bunch of human scales. Stop doing that. Dana White coming up in studio at 20 past. Our first in-studio interview in years. That's hour number three. I'm still trying to get to Big Mike McCarthy. And my conversation with Steve Young on the podcast. All of that still ahead.